Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited, with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
Alabama's ranked number 2. Georgia's number 3. And while Alabama might be able to get by and get by easily against plenty of foes they've faced in the SEC without Nick Saban on the sideline, that's a lot different task, a much taller task when it comes to doing it against the third-ranked team in the country. So, coming up on Saturday, what is going to happen? Well, for the time being, Nick Saban says that Steve Sarkisian is going to be handling things on the sidelines, that he is going to be the man in charge on the sideline. But in terms of the timing of this, if Nick Saban can't be on the sideline on Saturday, and if they play this game on Saturday, that, of course, is still up in the air as well, is this the worst possible timing for Nick Saban and getting this result back? It is where we begin. You're cold open.
At this point, I'm completely asymptomatic, feel fine. Our medical officials have told me as long as I remain asymptomatic, I will have a daily PCR testing per SEC protocol to confirm the initial positive.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
So it's really good news that he's asymptomatic, and really good news right now that he's feeling well. That's the most important part. In terms of football, this is both the worst timing and the best timing. Here's what I mean. In the micro, this is the worst timing. We're just a couple of days away from the most difficult challenge on your schedule, and this is when he tests positive. If this was before a game against Arkansas, if this was before a game against, insert your normal regular season patsy against Alabama here, hey, you know what? Alabama would roll without Saban on the sidelines, without Saban present in practice that week. They're that good. They're that buttoned up of a machine. I would have no doubt if they played 80% of their schedule, their normal schedule, without Saban present for practice or the game on Saturday, they'd be fine. This is different. Look, at the end of the day, Georgia has played really well against Alabama in big spots with Nick Saban on the sideline. With Bacon. So this shouldn't be any different. Georgia's really talented. Kirby Smart obviously knows Nick Saban, vice versa as well. But Georgia has the talent to run with Alabama. They have been able to close the door in those games, but the national championship game, the SEC title game, we've seen Georgia go toe-to-toe and be able to throw punch for punch. So in terms of the opponent and in terms of the timing of this, finding out on a Wednesday going into a Saturday night game, the timing is brutal here for opponent and work week that needs to be done and opposing coach. But in terms of macro timing, man, has there ever been a time in history where a coach could navigate this as easily as Nick Saban can because of technology? Yesterday at practice, they set up cameras for him on the practice field, and he sat in his home office, and he coached via Zoom. Now, this is the same exact thing that we've all done for months now. Logging on to some type of video chat with your bosses or your employees and give them directives. And this would never be possible if this was 10 or 15, 20 years ago. If this was Nick Saban at Michigan State, probably even Nick Saban at LSU, maybe Nick Saban at the Miami Dolphins, there's no technological infrastructure that would allow him to, in real time, be remotely coaching his guys. And so they set up cameras, and he sat at home, and he said if he didn't like a play, he told them to run it over. And he could give them pointers. Hey, this guy's got to do this. This is how this has got to run. This is how this has got to flow. I mean, think about that. In terms of timing for this virus and the infrastructure of technology being there, this is the one point in time that we've been able to do this and would be able to navigate this. I mean, just think about this show being able to be pulled off. All these sports radio shows and sports television shows have been mobilized because we now have the technology via digital equipment, very affordable digital equipment, Wi-Fi, high speeds, business internet, everything running all via Wi-Fi, and lighting and videos and your phones and your cameras all being an affordable place that you can do this. So the same thing for college football. Saban, maybe even as recently as 5 years ago, wouldn't necessarily have the Zoom technology to do this. And of course, he doesn't know any of this technology. He's got assistant coaches and engineers and stuff setting it up for him. But, I mean, Saban sitting at home watching practice the entire week. I don't know what his role is on Saturday. You know, I don't know if he's allowed to sit at home and have an earpiece into Steve Sarkisian. I don't know if he's allowed to be texting into the press box for any of the assistant coaches to tell Sarkisian. I don't know what that's going to be like. That's a big one. Who knows what that looks like if he's not allowed on the field on Saturday. But in terms of getting his team ready for this week, okay, he's not present yelling at him, but he's still assessing and yelling down the Zoom call at them. Fascinating stuff. Here's your phone number as we talk about, this is a huge game, by the way, as well, of course, Alabama and Georgia. An enormous game in the SEC. 855-212-4CBS. Again, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. In terms of just sheer football, whether Saban's on the sideline or not, whether practice goes well this week or not, the Alabama defense has problems. They have progressively gotten worse every game they have played this year. And while they were able to extend and win comfortably past Ole Miss was in that game for three quarters. And Ole Miss offensively was able to move the football up and down the field and score touchdowns. And Georgia has much better athletes than Ole Miss. They're better coached than Ole Miss. They've got more experience than Ole Miss. And I'm sure they're not intimidated by Alabama. So Bama's got issues here. Now, Bama's offense is amazing as well, and this might have a 51-48 written all over it. This could have a 48-45 written all over it. I think there's going to be major offensive chunk plays, big touchdowns, and yardage that you're going to see on Saturday night between these two clubs. But if there was ever a time for Georgia to do it, this is it. If there was ever a time for Georgia to flex its place in the SEC, this is it. You know you've got Bama with a weakened defense, and now you know you don't have, probably, Saban on the sideline. If there was ever a moment to do it, this is it. It was kind of like last year where we said if there was ever a moment for LSU to finally beat Alabama, this is it. Same deal. If there was ever going to be a game, a matchup where Georgia had to do it, this was going to have to be it. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Hey, Mraz, do you think that the Saban situation is going to affect the game on Saturday night?
How does it not? How does him physically not being on the sideline affect it at all? I mean, Kirby Smart is the one guy who can really go toe-to-toe with him. I know that there's been collapses by Georgia in the past, but regardless of text messages or Zoom or even if there's an earpiece or something like that, Nick Saban's physical presence in what should be a tight game in the fourth quarter, to me, has to be a factor in if Alabama wins this game or not.
I wonder if they're going to allow him to have instant communication down the line in the press box. I mean, isn't that also, it's an SEC, I'm sure it's an SEC guideline and not some type of NCAA guideline, I would think. And because Saban and Alabama rule the roost in the SEC, I gotta think that that office, that conference office, allows him to have communication, if it's not with Sarkisian on the sideline, with one of his assistant coaches in the press box.
Well, and I guess for anybody arguing that they shouldn't, why should Saban be punished because he tested positive for COVID? It's not as if he committed some kind of grand penalty that he needs to be suspended and you're worried about him coming back in. He tested
like
positive.
Like a cheating penalty, a recruiting violation, something
there,
like that.
There's no violation here. He tested positive for a virus that we're all living through in a pandemic right now. He's obviously healthy enough. He feels he's healthy enough to coach. As you pointed out, he could Zoom the practices and we can all do what we can working from home right now. Why shouldn't he be allowed instant communication in some way, shape, or form on Sunday? But I guess maybe
it's a gray area, a delicate line, because if you have people that can have instant information from outside of your in-stadium staff, could that lead to some weird stuff? You know, it's like a Patriots situation. It's like when the Cleveland Browns had Sashi Brown calling or texting the assistant coaches in the press box. You're not allowed to do that. I wonder if they worry about if you're allowed to have somebody on the outside of the stadium looking in over TV and communicating. Maybe it's a competitive advantage. I'm not sure.
I mean, but outside of, you know, Jamie Erdahl getting a Kirby Smart interview at halftime, what are you really getting from TV that Nick Saban can't possibly get from somebody up in the booth anybody?
I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that's why that rule exists in the NFL. There's got to be something where they don't want outside communication going into the coaching office.
I guess. I would just assume. Or maybe could you just set up instead of TV, make sure somebody sits there 15 feet away. He can't watch the game on TV, but you get the whatever images you get on the sideline with the Zoom cameras. How about that?
So you want them to have a camera on Sarkisian via Zoom, and Saban sits on the... sits at home.
Yes.
And
or yeah, like four cameras along the sideline. He could watch the whole field, but he could only watch basically the inside circuit television Zoom version of the game. And we rip all the cable wires out of Saban's house. You're not allowed to CBS broadcast.
I'll tell you this. I would love an in-house feed of Saban, like when they do those alternate broadcasts for the national championship game, just watching Saban from his house for the entire 3.5 hour, 4 hour extravaganza. And, oh, that would be just glorious.
And whatever Terry's cooking too, I'd like to get a camera on that.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Remember, didn't Hugh Freeze coach from his gurney from the hospital bed a year ago? Wasn't it a year ago where he was coaching? Was it Liberty? And he was in the press box?
Yeah, they wheeled the hospital bed into the press box.
I mean, why not just have Nick Saban like on a really comfortable bed, head propped up? He's in his Alabama sweats and he's just kind of hanging out. We don't want him overextending, but you know, he's maybe in his den, in his bedroom, and he's coaching in his Alabama pajamas. How about that?
With bacon.
Oh, with bacon.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
1 year ago, I had come back from a Clemson football trip with T-shirts that had Clemson Tigers on them from a local pizzeria. The pizzeria, huge listeners, and they were so nice to invite me and my friends in there for a couple of pies and some free T-shirts. I brought the T-shirts back for the gang, and Mraz could not tell the type of animal that was on a Clemson Tiger pizza T-shirt. Let's roll the clip. They're little stub tails. They're not long tiger tails.
Oh, no, those are just the big bears. The polar bears have tails, I think.
Is that right?
Or the grizzly bears. There's bears with tails.
Those grizzly bears.
Oh.
Hey.
You guys know what I mean.
No, grizzly bears and polar bears don't have any tails.
I got that polar bear with the tail over here.
Look, the point is this supposed tiger has a bear's face more. You're focusing on the tail.
Okay.
So Todoro might make a good slice. They make a pretty crummy tiger.
So lost.
He even got bare legs.
Hey,
I just saw a bear outside my back porch over here.
Got a giant tail.
Long tail over here. Those grizzly bears.
There definitely bears a long tail.
Smushed face bear.
Oh.
Why are you so convinced the tiger has a longer tail than a bear to begin with?
I know animal anatomy.
When was the last time you went face-to-face with a tiger? You tell me. You do some old personal research. I've been to the safari at Six Flags.
And you've seen long tails on bears?
I had to have, yes.
No, now you're questioning it.
No, I saw the bears with the tails.
Is that right?
But I'm not convinced the tigers have a long tail. The lions have it.
Oh, so now the lions have the tail. Okay, so now we're at the point where bears definitely have long tails and tigers might not.
Yeah, I just think that you're so convinced because you read a couple books that suddenly, you know, you're watching Nat Geo channel, suddenly you know what you're talking about. I've gone into the wilderness there. I've seen it.
Yeah, you've gone to the Six Flags Safari.
That's the wilderness. That's not a zoo because you have to stay in your car. That's how dangerous it is.
And you remember tigers with short tails and bears with long tails.
Definitely the bears with the long tails. I'm trying to think of the tigers now. And they are scary looking animals. You don't want to look for too long in the eyes. I'm going to jump on your windshield.
One of the greatest debates we've ever had here on the show. Finding out that Merez's animal safari parks were all these budget bootleg Long Island safari parks.
Welcome to the new Hyde Park Zoo.
where Bob and Nancy brought the kids. And it was like, oh, take a look at that baby bear. No, that's just a German shepherd with a mask on.
They put a pot of honey next to it. Look, it's Winnie the Pooh.
They put a t-shirt on a dog and said it was Winnie the Pooh.
Felt wrong.
We're going to do this all over again here.
Yeah. Yes. You just yelled at me for saying Jeffrey Mayer and Meyer wrong, but you're arguing over bear tails again. So, yes, we're going to do this.
At the West Babylon Safari Park. Oh, Dad, is that a beaver? Yeah, Sean, that's a beaver. That's a beaver. Actually, it's just a cat with a frying pan tied to it.
Hey, it's George from down the block. Hey, George.
Oh, man, that was one of the best.
Now, guys, you're stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So last week when we did that story about the dudes blowing up the ATM inside the Chinese food restaurant, listener said we all would have been bad crooks as we kind of walked through the way they should have done the robbery. Maybe we would be bad crooks, but I think we would be better than this guy in Mississippi, who allegedly was transporting 37.5 pounds of meth, which I believe is roughly a quarter of a jock alone, if I'm remembering the translation correctly. It's been a while. This guy, again, transporting all of these drugs, a street value of $350,000, couldn't be bothered to drive correctly on the way to wherever he was going with the drugs. He got pulled over for driving in a, quote, careless manner. He also couldn't be bothered to hide the 37.5 pounds of meth well. I count in a picture on this news report roughly 18 large, like gallon-sized Ziploc bags full of meth. They were apparently stuffed inside one spare tire that was just laying in the flatbed of this guy's truck for the cop to easily see while he pulls him over. So now this guy's arrested. Whoever wanted those drugs ain't getting them, all because this guy drove like a dummy and packed like a dummy, bringing his drugs to whoever, wherever he was going.
This is an optical illusion. I'm looking at the flatbed of this truck with the bags upon bags of meth, and I don't know how you would shove all of those bags inside a spare tire. That's got to be the biggest spare tire ever, unless it's a spare tire and what looks to be like that trunk that's in the back of that kind of big plastic trunk that's in the back of the flatbed. Could all of that fit inside one spare tire, you think?
I mean, if you're stuffing it around, like, the inner part of the tire that's open, maybe. But still, like, you got to cover that bad boy or get a car that has an actual covered trunk so the cop can't just see the bags of drugs inside your spare tire.
And that would be my point. I am not sure how much a, you know, 38 pounds of meth is going for in the open market these days.
$350,000.
Okay, so I would think somewhere...
I buy a lot of meth.
Right, whoever gets the cut... You know, when the cuts get divvied up of that $350 million, could somebody afford a cover for a flatbed of a truck? Or at worst, a tarp? I mean, can somebody, please?
Well, to be fair to the guy that's hauling 37 pounds of meth around Mississippi, don't you think the cop is going to look inside the flatbed truck anyway if this guy's driving carelessly?
I guess, but then can you maybe cut out the backs of your seats and then sew them back up? I mean, there's got to
better. Oh, so you've got some ideas about this. This is what, after watching Breaking Bad, you got some ideas about how to move meth?
I am very big on drug dealing shows. The Wire, Breaking Ozark.
Shows specifically.
I've seen the way they handle this, these people, and I just know it's not the way that this guy handled it. And you're saying, well, that's TV. I mean, it's obvious. It can't get worse than what this guy did. And I just think $350 million don't buy you what it used to anymore.
It's funny that you say that, because I actually thought moving it in a spare tire was actually pretty smart, because you could have the spare tire cover. Now, I don't know if he had a spare tire cover over it, but if you packed all the meth into the spare tire and then put the tire cover over it, that would definitely seem like, oh, just your spare tire. Right. I think, as Bogue said, if it's just packed inside the spare tire, it just seems like there's too much meth that would be overflowing, that this cop didn't have to do much to just look in the flatbed and be like, yeah, you're going to step out of the car here. But I don't know. All of those bags, I don't think that could fit in the back seat of your car if you cut out the interior of your seats. You know, I feel like that's too much. That'd be overflowing.
Do we have an intern and a meth connection to do any kind of experiment for us? I can get him a spare tire. Can Connor also, after Ballpark Bacon, could he see if he could stuff 18 bags of meth inside a spare tire?
That guy blew it, because that was $350,000 worth of meth there that he just gets taken away. I mean, look, and in Mississippi, that's like being a, you know, some type of massive cartel drug dealer. $350,000 worth of meth. To blow that because you're driving, he was probably on his phone. He's probably like texting somebody. Oops. Oh, I got the popo behind me now. There goes my $350,000.
The only way I can accept you driving carelessly while hauling that much drugs is if you're so petrified of getting caught that your hands are shaking the whole time and like you're almost on the verge of passing out. Otherwise, if you're just driving like a dope because you're not paying enough attention to what you're doing, then you should go to jail for longer than what would normally this kind of crime would call for.
Could you imagine having all the work that goes into $350,000, 38 pounds of meth? I mean, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of household chemicals you got to bake in the bathtub and cut up and do all
of
whatever. A lot of Windex. That's a lot of trips to Walmart because you can't get it all in one fell swoop. And, you know, boom, because you're texting and driving, it's all taken away. You know, life of crime doesn't pay, kids.
And by the way, if he was that dumb to get caught, he's singing like a bird to the cops for whoever the big dog is in charge of those drugs. Any questions?
No doubt. The Brooklyn Nets, once they left New Jersey to become the Brooklyn Nets, wanted to identify themselves as New York City and not New Jersey any longer. The dynamic of the New Jersey Nets was always one that was somewhat pathetic. They played in a dated facility at the Meadowlands amongst the swamps where there was nothing else to do on a given winter night if you went to go watch the Devils or the Nets. And because the Knicks were the Knicks, no matter what the Nets did, it always paled in comparison to the Knicks, especially for the 80s and 90s, when Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley and John Starks and Pat Riley and Jeff Van Gundy were perennially a really interesting basketball team. Things changed a little bit in the 2000s because the Knicks began their slow slide into disaster and the Nets went to back-to-back NBA finals. But still, even when the Nets were in the finals,
it didn't resonate a lot with New York City. It resonated in New Jersey, but not in New York City. And that is where all the media is in New York City. Even if it's just across the river, it's still about the New York City teams. It's just different in that way. And so when the Nets moved to Brooklyn, I think they wanted to leave New Jersey behind, okay? Because New Jersey was just not cool. None of that was considered cool, and they wanted to be hip and cool, which is why they established a brand new logo, and it was black and white. They wanted to stylize the B. They wanted it to be about the city and about the borough and about Brooklyn. Brooklyn was cool. New Jersey was not. And so it's about Notorious B.I.G. and the flavor of the grit of Brooklyn. It's just not about New Jersey. And so one of the things that's been very disappointing for Nets fans, and Mraz is one of them so he can speak to this, is all of the memories that they had from really good years with Vince Carter and Jason Kidd and going to back-to-back NBA Finals, basically ignored by the team nowadays. So yesterday's announcement and really cool video by the team on social media of them going back to early 90s era jerseys for their city edition, their alternate jersey, was met with huge applause. And the video is badass. The video is amazing because it shows the players of the early 90s in the jerseys transitioning to the stars today and vice versa. So you see Derek Coleman, and he evolves into one of the players in the current Nets. Same with the players like Kenny Anderson from back then, or Drazen Petrovic, still one of the most beloved players in franchise history. So the video's cool, the jersey's cool, and specifically the jersey that they chose. If you remember the Nets jerseys from the early 90s, the 80s, 90s, they were blue and red, or the home jerseys were white with red trim, basically. But there was one alternate set of jerseys that I always thought were the coolest freaking jerseys to bring back. And they were, you might see these on some throwback jersey stores, the tie-dyed, kind of blue-splashed blue jerseys that Drazen Petrovic and Derek Coleman and Kenny Anderson would wear. And they're not full blue. They're like blue waves with the white in there as well. It's a very unique look, and it's got the red trim across the front that says Nets. I always thought these were amazing. They're kind of, it's hard to describe what they are, but they almost look spray painted. And I always thought these were so cool and look so cool in terms of how 90s nostalgia is back. I think the Nets nailed this. And if the Nets are good with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and they wear these uniforms, I'm telling you, it is going to look badass. Mraz, I don't know what you feel about this, but I saw this and said, this is a win in every way, shape, and form.
So I really like them because I do think they needed to go back. I mean, for anybody who doesn't realize, just seeing the word Nets on a jersey since they went to Brooklyn is like seeing a tail on a bear. It is very, very rare. They had those ones that said Brooklyn Nets on them. They had a weird black. They tried to make throwback that said Nets on them. But it always is Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Brooklyn. Almost like they tried to wash the fact that they are called the Nets. So I like the fact that they're going down that road. And I do like the spray paint splash. But to me, since this is the first time you're finally acknowledging the past, I would have gone with the solid blue with the red. I think that would have looked a lot cleaner. I think the reason they're going for the spray paint is less of what you're talking about and more of they're still trying to be hip Brooklyn, and I think the spray paint kind of represents that. So I really like them, and I would be lying if I told you I am not already asking for a Kevin Durant one for Christmas, so I can't tell you I dislike them. I just think because we've waited so long to get kind of an acknowledgement that they did play in New Jersey, I would have liked the full base blue color to me with the Nets on it.
I think they went with these because 90s nostalgia is in. And the NBA is doing this with a lot of teams. You see those old Sean Kemp Cavaliers jerseys that almost look like they sat on wet paint. They've brought those back. We've seen the Jazz go to the mountains again. We've seen a lot of teams go the Cavaliers, and just one of the examples of teams trying to capture the 90s nostalgia when the NBA was so popular. And even though those Nets teams weren't very good with DC and Kenny Anderson and Drazen, they still capture a moment in time. So I think that this, you're right, they're trying to be cool by doing the throwbacks, but they actually are the coolest ones. They're not the base ones that you're talking about, but I actually think they're the coolest Nets jerseys that they ever had when they were playing in New Jersey.
I mean, that's totally fair. Bogus looks like he has something on his mind on these.
Bogues, do you like them or no?
I'm a Nets fan that's old enough to remember Kenny and DC and Drazen wearing them. I think Sean's first Net love affair was Chris Gatling, who never wore these jerseys, as far as I can remember. So, and I agree with Sean. The blue road jerseys of that era are beautiful. So if they were going back to like a full-time uniform like that, great. But for a throwback situation, we're only going to wear these a handful of times, they have to go with these cloud ones. These jerseys have taken on kind of like this mythical feeling around Net fans, around NBA fans, because they didn't wear them that long. They were both beautiful and ridiculous.
Correct.
Because some people thought they were ugly. Some people thought they were beautiful. There was kind of no middle ground on these things.
Right.
So they have a very special place in this little corner of NBA history. And there's no doubt, like you said at the beginning of this, DA, the previous regime did all they could to get away from New Jersey. In fact, I think they even wore throwback Long Island Net uniforms before they mentioned anything about Jersey. This new regime now acknowledges where the organization really came from, and this apparently is just the beginning of them kind of re-embracing their Jersey heritage.
And it's smart, because right now the Knicks are terrible, and the Knicks are so unlikable that if you are in New York City or the tri-state area, if you are playing on both the cool factor and the nostalgic factor, it's way better to throw that door open for everybody to jump in when the Nets could be good and the Knicks are a disaster. Also, exactly as you said, Bogues, they split the difference between beautiful and ridiculous, which is much like how when the Grizzlies are playing in the old Vancouver Grizzlies jerseys or the Toronto Raptors are playing in the actual dinosaur jerseys. It's hard to figure. Like, they are definitely ugly, but it's definitely cool that they're wearing them. And I feel like this is exactly that. And I have to say, I think Kyrie is really annoying and hard to like, but when he is sporting this jersey, Mraz, I'm like, God, he looks cool in that. That jersey just looks cool.
He does. And for the faction of the fan base that were really big New Jersey Nets fans that maybe still were bothered by the fact that they went back across to Brooklyn, I think now all of their... You know, this is part of hop aboard if you're in the tri-state area.
Right.
Even if you stopped loving us when we went to Brooklyn, we have Durant, we have Kyrie, and look, we remember that we were there with these jerseys. And I think it's just a way of encompassing as many fans in this tri-state area as possible ahead of a year where they think they have a really good opportunity to get to an NBA Finals, and it could be a really monumental year, everything involved for this franchise.
It'll be bizarre to see Kevin Durant in an early 90s Derek Coleman Nets jersey, wouldn't it? I mean, how bizarre will that look?
It'll even be more bizarre when I'm wearing it at Fire Island next year. I mean, that'll be...
Well, right. I would say it's more bizarre when you open it up on Christmas morning from your Christmas list, not because an adult making money, but for yourself. You ask Santa for it.
I want to start with the ALCS last night, because this was game, set, match for the Astros. The Rays had a commanding 3-0 series lead, and the Astros were throwing the ball, kicking the ball all over the yard. They were playing sloppy. There were no clutch hits, and the Rays defense was continually stymieing anything that the Astros could put together. They were so frustrated, the Astros, that nothing was falling. Last night, they put it in a place where the Rays couldn't catch it. And that was the difference. It was a 4-3 win last night as George Springer breaks the tie with a 2-run home run. Jose Altuve also goes deep. It has an RBI double. But the two home runs were the difference, Springer and Altuve. And the Astros get the win 4-3 to stay alive. Now, two things here. Number one, the Astros are openly talking about being only the second team ever to come back from down 3-0. Remember, the Red Sox did it, of course, against the Yankees in the 04 ALCS. The Astros are saying, we want to be that second team. We believe we can be that second team. And if that happens, forget it. 2020 is really kicking us all in the stones. If we have the Astros down 3-0 and they come back to win this series, and they get back to the World Series after the non-punishment that they did not have to deal with because Rob Manfred botched that whole thing, if the Astros come all the way back from down 3-0 and are laughing in our face, pointing in our face all the way to the World Series, it is going to be the worst thing ever. So we stare down the abyss of the possibility of the Astros having the ultimate gotcha moment. You thought you had us. Gotcha. You thought we were dead. Gotcha. You thought we wouldn't be good without banging trash cans. Gotcha. You thought that Jose Altuve couldn't throw to first base. Gotcha. I mean, this is the last thing we need. So the Rays have got to close up shop here. They've got three more chances to do it. They're up 3-1 now. And I love the fact that there's no off days in the baseball playoffs this year. Whereas, isn't it grand to not have travel days, to just know every single day is the next game in this series?
It's unbelievable because it's a guarantee. Every night now I'm in that total routine. I know what series is on when it's on. I know we're getting game after game after game. I absolutely love it. Because there's nothing worse than getting in the groove of a series and it's two games in, you're really roped in, and now here's a day off. And then maybe you're watching football and you kind of lose interest in the series. There's momentum to this being every day. And it certainly has me for somebody in a sport that's regionalized. I know I'd be watching for, you know, work purposes anyway, but even with the Yankees out, usually I get a little disgruntled and don't really care after the Yankees get knocked out. I'm locked in. I can't wait for these games every night. And the momentum that carries you through night to night, I think is a reason why.
Also, baseball should take a page out of this. They should try to avoid games on the weekends at all costs because October, with college football and the NFL, we're just consumed by that. But if they played every night, even on a Monday night against Monday Night Football, Monday through Friday, to get those series condensed and in once all of this is over anyway, I think baseball could benefit because a week like this week was weird. We had a Monday night and a Tuesday night football. Right. But if you have your LCSs going Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're getting the bulk, if not the entire series in one fell swoop, before we get to a football weekend. I think baseball could really benefit from trying like hell to get as many games as possible without travel days into the middle of weeks. I know it's hard with travel days because, look, if this was the Braves, the Dodgers, flying cross country, you would think you'd have to have the day off. But boy, trying to schedule as much as possible midweek, I think, is the win for baseball.
And bravo for baseball and Fox doing what they're doing tonight. That game originally on FS1 will still be on FS1, but also being on Fox tonight, the NLCS, with the Chiefs and Bills game getting moved to Monday. They could have left that game on cable, and now with a football void on a Thursday night, you're getting baseball on network TV tonight with the Los Angeles Dodgers and Braves. I think it's a huge win for baseball and another smart part of this momentum shift.
This is a big night for baseball because if we have these two good games on a Thursday night where there is no football on, the random COVID game, as you said, that got moved so there is no football on, at least no NFL football on, and Major League Baseball has two good games here, and maybe we have the Rays clinch a spot of the World Series with a great game, baseball could really benefit. Also, from an Astros standpoint last night, we laughed at Greinke's commentary the other day on yesterday's show about how Greinke said he's not having fun. Nothing is fun about the playoffs. They even won the first two series. Nothing is fun. Last night, he pitched pretty well. He went six innings. He got out of that bases loaded jam. And I don't know if that was fun for Greinke, but it was important for Greinke. And I'm guessing the Astros had fun watching Greinke pitch like that.
Yeah, the Rays didn't as well. Tyler Glasnow, I expected more out of last night. And DA, I don't know if you've picked up on this. When Tyler Glasnow pitches these games to the Rays, remember he was a big piece that came back in the Chris Archer trade.
Yeah.
This guy keeps telling the story in high school how he has carpal tunnel syndrome in his throwing hand and he can't grip a fastball straight anymore. How do you get carpal tunnel by the time you're in high school that you can't grip baseball? Well, what is he, a 60-year-old woman who's been a secretary his whole life?
Maybe it's too much gaming. You know, if you're using that video gaming console too much and your buttons and your thumbs and your fingers are all over the place, I wonder if that's it.
Carpal, I wonder if that's if it's something else. Carpal tunnel in high school?
That is a major issue. And then to still be a great major league pitcher, maybe a little less carpal tunnel and a little more pitching last night, and the Rays have a sweep. But they told this story like every Glasnow start in the playoffs. And at some point, Glasnow and his agent has to call, all right, guys, people, stop. We got to stop with the carpal tunnel story, because now I'm really starting to get some weird, weird questions on Twitter.
Do you think that the Rays close things out tonight?
I do. I think the Rays are a team that can drop the hammer. I think what you saw last night was one last gasp of fight from the Astros. No, I think Tampa's going to find a way to get it done and have their bullpen completely mow down the Astros as the innings wear on tonight.
Yeah, and also it wasn't like the Rays laid down last night. That was one of the crispest, best games the Astros could play, and they still almost lost it. The Rays still almost came back to win. The Rays are better. The Rays are much better, and I know that the margin of error has not been that big between these two teams of this series, but the Rays are definitely better. I agree. I think they ended tonight, and we are watching the Tampa Bay freaking Rays with $28 million in payroll and nobody anybody's ever heard of, waiting days to see who is going to be their foe in the World Series.
Yeah. And is freaking Arozarena. Another home run last night from the guy who was nothing but a defensive replacement and did 300 push-ups a day and ate rice and chicken every day during having COVID, has somehow become Babe Ruth. I can't take this guy. What's his name?
Arozarena.
He crushed the Yankees. I've already forgotten his name. And he hits home runs every night. I'm so sick of this guy's face.
So this story is amazing. He's been a defensive replacement his entire life and his entire career. And then during COVID, he had nothing to do. So he just started working out. He just started to lift and to do like bicep curls, right? It was like home workouts, like home gym workouts.
Very big on the push-ups. The push-ups were the big thing for him.
So push-ups, right, just push-ups. And he's eaten as much rice and beans as possible, I guess, because that was, I don't know why he did. I love rice and beans.
He said it's the only thing he knows how to cook. And there was nobody allowed around him because he's not married or anything because he had COVID. So the only thing he knew how to cook was that. So that's all he cooked.
So he was crushing rice and beans, and I could eat rice and beans all day long. All he's eating is rice and beans and doing push-ups, and he goes from a defensive replacement to suddenly a power hitter. I mean, how could it happen? This Rays team has the most bizarre set of stories.
Yeah, I've said I've wanted to lose 100 pounds for a long time. This guy basically had 20 days after a positive COVID test where you should be laid up in bed and transformed his entire body. And here I am jiggling every time I take a step because one milkshake derails me for 4 weeks.
Now, speaking of, I posted the picture of you and I hanging out at Casa de Da a couple of weeks ago on the deck, and it was very interesting. I had a couple of comments on it on Instagram. Of people saying, you guys say Mraz is a big guy. He's not that big. And then you said, boy, I really look puffy. You felt that you looked puffy, and other people thought we over-exaggerate your weight on the show.
Well, look, I've made this reference. I am not somebody that needs the roof flap on the house to get out and get to a doctor's appointment. I don't need to bathe outside with a hose and somebody take me down. So, you know, it depends where you're talking about how big you are. Yes, I'm not somebody, I can move, right? I'm nimble. But my wife that day bought me this shirt. We wanted the whole family to match these apple orchard pictures. I don't even know if they came out. And it was like a thick flannel shirt, but then it got chilly, so I had to throw a sweatshirt over it. And it was almost like I was wearing a Kevlar vest. And in that picture, I'm sorry, I look like I've added about 4 inches of body mass from my actual stomach to where the picture came out. And it looks like you have a weird, almost like I was cast for a movie where I'm a bouncer somewhere and I needed to put on weight. I thought the imagery of me was not the best in that situation, in that picture.
But you don't think it's what you ate. You just think it's the layers that you were wearing.
Well, don't get me wrong. What you don't know is I don't know, should I admit this? About 10 minutes before I got to your house, I sneakily crushed a hot dog that was baked inside a pie from this pie place by you without anybody in my family knowing. So,
oh, is that right? Oh, I didn't know this. So that place...
Well, I wasn't going to make that become public. Protein?
Okay, so you went apple picking earlier in the day, and there was a bit of a situation that unfolded. One of the people at the apple picking orchard got kind of in your face about walking with the stroller in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
and it became a bit of an altercation, and Danielle said, we're not going to buy a pie here. So you asked me where to buy pies in my neighborhood.
Yes.
So I sent you to a pie place, and then you brought over a delicious apple crumb pie. But I did not know that at this pie place, you actually bought a hot dog wrapped in a pie.
Yes, so they have this crazy menu, and as you can imagine, DA knows where to send me. It was like waiting online for Space Mountain at Disney World. You're just looking up going, wow, look at all these lights.
And it smells unbelievable.
Smells good. I had a bagel on the way. I was hungry walking around, and I said, what does a hot dog and a pie taste like? And I know we were about to eat at your house, but the move had to be done. So this thing is like a foot long, too. It's like, and it's wrapped in like basically the same kind of pie dough an apple pie would be wrapped in.
Oh, I haven't had this.
It's a lot of bread, and it is a long wiener. I mean, you hold this wiener in your mouth, and you chomp on it, and you chomp on it, and you chomp on it, and the dough is wrapped around. You know, your mouth starts to gurgle a little bit. It was a big wiener. So now I ate this thing wrapped in pie dough. Then I have to wipe the crumbs off my face.
So you eat it inside as Danielle and Taylor are in the car.
Now I get in the car. We have the cookies to go because I'm going to save those for the ride home. We're going to bring an apple pie because I wanted that at your house. And now we take that picture, and I realize I'm putting the sweatshirt over. I think there was a lot of bread and yeast from the pie dough, and that's a big dong, that hot dog there, with a lot of salt. So
The sodium from a foot-long dong.
Right. So when I realize sodium mixed with the padding, and then I take that picture, I mean, then you throw in the pumpkin beers, the calorie counter then starts to ring. It's like,
yeast?
You know, when you're using too much electricity with central air, and the people come, and it's ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. That's my calorie counter, and then I end up a fat pig on your picture.
Let me tell you, though, that was such a good day. It was such a fun day, and Papa Amendo, when I told him you were coming upstate, his eyes lit up. He's like, no way, Mraz is coming. I go, yeah. He's going to be at the house? I go, yeah. I said, he actually said that he'd like to see you. He goes, really? I go, well, do you want to come over? He goes, let me clear my social calendar. Yeah, I'm going to come over. So my dad comes over. He couldn't stop laughing. He was talking to you the entire day. I mean, you had him in stitches. That was one of the best Saturdays he's had.
I was one of the best Saturdays I've had. I'm no offense to you. I was more looking forward to hanging out with your father than I was you. He's
I don't blame
best.
You. He's
the
way
absolute
more interesting
best.
Than I am.
Oh, yeah. God, his conversations are great. But, yeah, I had to have that conversation, and he probably smelt my fat hot dog breath on his face the whole day. I feel bad. Please apologize to him for me.
You got to check out this picture on Instagram. I actually don't think you look that puffy, but you apparently do. This is on Instagram, at Damon Amendo. You can check that out there. Follow me there, at Damon Amendo. Also, your Good Mojo pictures of the day every day there as well.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to GEICO. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to GEICO and save. We appreciate you being with us on this fine Thursday morning. We begin with Sean Payton, New Orleans Saints head coach. The Saints want to have fans in the Superdome. The city of New Orleans says, no, it's too dangerous right now. We've been a hotspot for COVID. And so the Saints are discussing, with the NFL involved, playing their home games at LSU in Baton Rouge. Here is Sean Payton.
I don't think there'll be many challenges. I mean, it's right up the road. You know, you'd be playing on grass outside in a great environment. And so, you know, if it was playing it in the dome with no fans or playing up there with 25,000 of our fans, then every one of us would make the second choice. So we would embrace it.
Can I tell you that one of the good things, there's a silver lining to every situation. As bad as 2020 is, there's always silver linings. One of the silver linings is that we as fans are valued more than we used to be. All of these teams and all of these leagues are realizing that they need us. Television networks need us. Because sports is fine, sports is great. Sports is fun, and watching great athletes compete is clearly an entertainment that's enjoyable no matter what kind of the setting is. But with us, it's just way better.
And I have to tell you, I know that ratings are down across the board for all sports. It's not just one league or the other. Ratings were down for the Stanley Cup. Ratings are down for Major League Baseball's playoffs. Ratings were down for the NBA. Ratings, even from NFL standards, because they're so sky high, have been chipped into. I really think a big deal, a big part of that, is the election. This is such an intense political climate that people are really paying attention to. And part of it is that we are out of our rhythm from a seasonal standpoint, so things are not happening when they normally take place. But also, without fans, I feel like a lot of us watch a game and just don't have the same investment. I think a lot of us watch these games, it's just not the same. And so you're not dying for the next game because there's not the intensity, the urgency, or the spectacle that it normally is. I think that really has lessened the experience. And I know that the leagues feel it because it's not just getting paying customers in the stands for monetary reasons. It's the piped in crowd noise. I mean, the fact that all these broadcasts wanted piped in crowd noise. I mean, look at the NBA. Those were digital fans. They didn't even get fans to buy tickets. I know that there was some type of subscription there, but they're not there buying food or buying beer or whatever or parking. This is just about having the sound or the energy of us. And I think that's been a really cool thing that moving forward, I don't think you can take us for advantage of us anymore. I don't think you can simply ignore us as we are just an annoyance. You know, I know having a partial season ticket package to the Mets, hearing the, you know, what they would do for me if I re-up for next year and the things that they would throw in and the bonuses and, well, how about this? How about this? I mean, they're just checking in to see how I'm feeling. Not like they're worried about my health, but just they want me to know that they care about me, which, believe me, as we all know, being a ticket buying sports fan, you feel like you're just run over all the time. So that's one thing. I mean, hear what Sean Payton said. If it meant playing in our own home stadium, an NFL facility where they know all the bells and whistles and all the ins and outs with no fans, or going to an outdoor college stadium. I've been to Baton Rouge. I've been to LSU Tiger Stadium. It's a wonderful college experience. It's not a great facility. It's not an NFL caliber facility. The fact that they would opt for 20,000 fans in Baton Rouge versus zero fans of their own Superdome tells you they value us. And that's great. That's really important. Here is Yankees GM Brian Cashman on how good the roster he built is.
Ultimately, we have a championship contending roster. I believe that is a fact. We're not going to be able to call ourselves champions. That is also a fact. And so we'll continue to find a way to improve upon the roster.
Boy, I heard this soundbite yesterday and I kind of had to roll my eyes. I mean, how many teams can say we have a championship caliber roster, but we can't call ourselves champions? I mean, in the NFL, like every team that goes 10-6 can argue that. Well, we got a championship caliber roster. We won 10 games. We're just not champions. I mean, who cares? Like the Atlanta Falcons could have said that when they were up 28-3 in the Super Bowl. Who cares? And you haven't won for 11 years. You haven't even been in the World Series. You haven't even been the second best team in baseball in 11 years. And you're going to say, well, we've got a championship caliber team. I don't know. It's a hard sell for me these days for the Yankees. And finally, here is Bruce Arians when he is asked about the fact that his team lead the league in dropped passes.
Hey, Bruce. Drops are an unofficial statistic, but there are a lot of national football stat websites out there that have the Bucs leading the league in dropped passes this year. The living legend like Tom Brady throwing your backs, tight ends, and receivers the ball. Are you surprised there hasn't been more accountability among your players in catching more passes?
I don't know who the hell makes up these stats. I don't see us dropping the ball that much. We had a game where we did, but I don't put any stock in it. Our guys can catch, and we don't say about it.
Okay.
We don't say bleep about it. And there is Bruce Arians after losing to the Bears. That is how Bruce Arians sounds when he has to deal with the fact that the Bears beat him.
I don't put any stock in it. Our guys can catch, and we don't say about it.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. It's great.
Got it, Bruce. Ugh. I'm out of here. onto asking Walker Buehler about his pants.
Okay.
That is your sound check. Now, coming up next segment, we're going to have young, talented Connor Green delivering a special episode of Canadian Bacon as part of Mraz's Twitter punishment. But what we've also learned this week is that even though Mraz has been punished, he has still lived his life, let's face it. On Sunday, in fact, he was living his best life. It was detailed in full in the PGP about what type of day Mraz had on Sunday. And it was a doozy. It was something that would kill mere mortals. But for Mraz, who's clearly more than that, it was a monster. But we were poking fun at him this week because he said that he was laser focused when he was writing the topic sheet Sunday night, despite a big day at the bar, a big day at Bob's Bar, a big day that ended actually with him taking a bottle of whiskey from his dad, which is the poll question today. He claims it's not stealing. The poll question is taking something from your parents considered stealing? Very important poll question. So yesterday, Mraz was painting this picture of how locked in he was during the topic list that he sends out on Sunday night. Let's play a clip for you.
I was laser focused, like laser focused, blocking out all outside noise. Every single letter was a tight detail.
Laser focused, every single letter was a tight detail. And it's interesting, when he said this, it appears that there's a bit of a negative campaign running against him. There was an informant that may have acquired actual video from Sunday night as he is sitting on that couch using that laptop to send out the topic list.
No.
There's actual video of it. I just like, maybe this is tomorrow's poll question. Does this sound like laser focus?
Spell prevail.
P-R-E-V-A-I-L. E-I-E-I-O.
I'm not, it's not funny. All
right. Can I do a moo moo? And then I say a cow here and a cow there and a cow everywhere.
Oh, come on. We got it on the stream now?
You got to see it too. If you should ever be at watchda.com. You got to
see
it.
You all have seen this? You've all seen this?
I played it in my backyard last on the big projector.
How
screen.
Did you get it?
If we all got people.
If you can watch at watchda.com, go there right now, okay? Because Cap is going to keep this up throughout the update. If you are watching on Twitch, go to CBS Sports Radio's channel on Twitch. The video is so good because it is Mraz sitting on the couch with his jersey on, his Amon Bradshaw jersey on, his Giants shorts and Giants cozy socks.
Socks. He's got socks on too. Jersey, shorts, socks.
And his legs are up on the ottoman part of the couch, and he's got the laptop in his belly, in his lap, and his eyes are open about 10%. He's got the biggest bleep eating grin on his face. He looks like he has just had the greatest day ever. It looks like he just finished up 25 beers with a nightcap of the whiskey that you would steal from your dad. And he is just on cloud nine. And Danielle asks him to spell prevail. And he goes P-R-E-V-A-E-I-E-I-O.
P-R-E-V-A-I-O. E-I-E-I-O.
And he says with a honk honk here.
I'm not, it's not funny.
And he's,
can I do a moo moo? And then I say a cow here and a cow there and a cow everywhere.
He's giggling. And he says with a moo moo. He's giggling. I mean, he looks like he's half asleep.
Right. He's teetering on his right side. He might tip over. Maybe.
He's 10 sheets to the wind. He's saying with a honk honk here and a moo moo here. And this is what Mraz claims is laser focused.
Can I do a moo moo? And then I say a cow here and a cow there and a cow everywhere.
That's my wife's got some nerve, by the way.
As I said in our email chain yesterday, this is your wife actually calling you a Cancer, not the Bourbon Belle talking about DA's astrological sign.
And she only told me she said this to DA. She goes, by the way, just so you know, I had no idea she had any video of me doing the topic list.
Oh, so again, laser focus. You were videotaped and didn't remember it?
I had no idea she had video of me. None.
Incredibly locked in, just totally laser focused on the task at hand as he's being videotaped, is ignoring it, nearly keeling over on the couch to fall asleep and doing nursery rhymes.
I believe the focus was asking her how to spell prevail as I tried to type it in the topic list so I didn't screw that up. So that is focus. I'm glad you guys can see my game day uniform. And that's because we keep playing Old MacDonald for Taylor, so my brain registered that. The moo moo here and a moo moo there.
And I don't know if you were.
Moo-moo, and then I say a cow here and a cow there and a cow everywhere.
I don't know if you were saying a hunk hunk or an oink oink. It's hard to figure out what you were saying.
I don't know what I was saying.
Are we going to play any more? Because I don't want to spoil my favorite part, but this is it. I want to point out my favorite part, which we have not heard yet.
Yeah, I think next hour perhaps we'll play a little bit
more. How long are we going to string this along here? We got two guests next hour.
It's 3 hours long. It's getting us to Monday.
We have the informant, and she's just the best.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save. And play is stopped.
We crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
Oh, a throwback to a simpler time, the Stanley Cup playoffs, when Mraz took us through the daily comings and goings of the hockey postseason. But because of his punishment, his violations on Twitter, we have young Connor Green stepping in to host Ballpark Bacon of the three worst losses in the Yankees' history since Mraz has become a fan. We begin with the 2001 Diamondbacks Yankees World Series. Connor Green, take it away.
Well, since the Yankees now officially qualify as a long-suffering franchise and Mraz has seemingly jumped ship, let's take a look at three of the worst Yankee losses of Sean's life. Number one, Game 7 of the 2001 World Series. The Yankees looking to win their fourth straight World Series title. Fourth straight. It's hard to win four straight World Series. It really is. It's hard to count to four in general. Just ask Tom Brady. The Bombers held a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the ninth. Mariano Rivera on the mound. Game over, right?
No!
Floater, center field. The Diamondbacks are world champions.
Just imagine a young Sean Mraz after that heartbreaking loss. And imagine if young Sean Mraz had access to Twitter.
No!
Mraz would have been tweeting that Mariano Rivera is overrated. Not a true Yankee. Scott Brosius is a stiff. Chuck Knobloch is a waste of space. In Mraz's defense, this game really was a heartbreaker, and I actually cried after this loss. I also cried at the end of Marley and Me, but that's neither here nor there. Scott Brosius, by the way, retired after this game, which was obviously a crushing blow. He was the straw that stirred the drink for those late 90s Yankees. The Yankees have not been the same since.
Oh, man. Connor's good at this. Tweeting, Mariano, not a true Yankee. That's Scott Brosius. Total stiff.
I'm putting his jersey back in my closet.
Marley and Me, though, was very sad. Let's get to the second worst loss in Mraz's life.
Number two, Game 7 of the 2004 ALCS. The Boston Red Sox trying to break the curse of the Bambino. The Yankees desperately trying not to blow a 3-0 lead. No worries, though. The Yankees had Kevin Brown on the mound. Wait, Kevin Brown? You're telling me El Duque wasn't available? You're telling me Yankee great John Lieber couldn't pitch? Where's Yankee great Esteban Loaiza when you need him? Anyway, look, I'm sure things turned out okay. They have the Yankee mystique, right? The ghosts of the old Yankee Stadium?
No! No!
Damon hits it in the air to right field. Sheffield back in the corner. At the wall, a grand slam. Johnny Damon. Quiet all series, goes deep. Four more runs, and it's 6-0.
Look, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. It's not like the Red Sox won the World Series that year. It's not like since that game, the Red Sox have 4 World Series championships and the Yankees only have 1. It's not like the Red Sox have the most World Series titles in the MLB since 2004. And the Yankees, meanwhile, have turned into a high-priced version of the Twins. At least that didn't happen, right? And just for the record, America's most beloved sports broadcaster, Alex Rodriguez, went 0-for-4 in Game 7 and was 2-for-17 in the final 4 games of that series.
Oh. Man, this is unbelievable. This is way better than even I would have thought. Connor is crushing it.
This
is so good. And by the way, watching Mraz's hands go over his face as he has to relive the Johnny Damon grand slam, it is just killing you inside.
Yeah, it is. By the way, bad job by him. He mentions Esteban Loaiza. Doesn't mention that the man just got arrested, so that would have been a good joke to write in. But hey, he's doing the bacon, not me.
Oh, here you go. Now Mraz trying to take down Connor Green a peg because Connor's just absolutely ripping it apart. And finally, here is the third worst loss in Mraz's Yankee fandom.
And last but not least, Game 6 of the 2019 ALCS. The Yankees taking on America's most beloved sports franchise, the Houston Astros. A team that does things the right way. The Astros way. They work hard. They're technologically savvy. They have phenomenal attention to detail. And like the great George Washington, they have never, ever told a lie. The Yankees won 103 games that year, but just could not compete with such a classy, well-run organization.
No! No! No!
There'll be a 2-1 to Altuve. Swung on and hit in the end of deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone to win the series. Jose Altuve hit a 2-run home run. The Astros win 6-4, and they capture the series 4-2.
When Jose Altuve hit that home run, the entire country cheered in unison. America's team, the Houston Astros, are going back to the World Series. The Yankees got smashed like a Houston trash can, and that's all there is to say. I mean, look, did the Astros cheat by stealing signs? Maybe. But is the Astros cheating in the game of baseball as bad as Sean Mraz cheating on the Yankees by rooting for the Rays? I don't think so. So there it is, 3 of the worst Yankee losses of Sean's life. Things might be tough right now, but at least Sean has the always successful New York football Giants to help ease the pain.
Holy crap.
Oh.
Man, we put Connor Green into a big spot, and he just demolished a grand slam to win the ALCS for us.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
Mraz grabbed food and a bottle of liquor, a bottle of whiskey from his dad's house, but claimed it wasn't stealing because it was, quote, his parents, even though they didn't know. We asked you guys today as the poll question, is it stealing if you take things from your parents without telling them? 80% said, yes, it's stealing. A bottle of proper number 12 Irish whiskey goes for $21. West Babylon's crime rate is lower than approximately 30% of New York communities. In an Ohio State National Longitude Study, 16% of participants reported having something stolen in the past year.
Boy, digging deep.
Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Once again, Mraz is at the epicenter.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
The video is so good because it is Mraz sitting on the couch with his jersey on, his Ahmad Bradshaw jersey on, his giant shorts and giant cozy socks.
Socks. He's got socks on too. Jersey shorts, socks.
And his legs are up on the ottoman part of the couch.
And I got an oopsie.
And he's got the laptop in his belly, in his lap. And his eyes are open about 10%. He's got the biggest bleep-eating grin on his face. He looks like he has just had the greatest day ever. It looks like he just finished up 25 beers with a nightcap of the whiskey that you would steal from your dad. And he is just on cloud nine. And Danielle asks him to spell prevail. And he goes, P-R-E-V-A-E-I-E-I-O.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
P-R-E-V-A-I-O. E-I-E-I-O.
And he says, with a honk honk here.
Honk honk here.
It's not funny.
And he's
kind of do a moo moo, and then I say a cow here, and a cow there, and a cow everywhere.
And on his farm, he had a cow, E I E I O, with a moo moo here and a moo moo there.
He's giggling. And he says, with a moo moo. He's giggling. I mean, he looks like he's half asleep.
Right, he's teetering on his right side. He might tip over. Maybe.
The cow!
He's 10 sheets to the wind. He's saying a little honk honk here and a moo moo here. And this is what Mraz claims is laser focus.
Can I do a moo moo? And then I say a cow here and a cow there and a cow over here.
That's my wife's Mraz. Got some nerve, by the way.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
You know in Toy Story how Woody sits? He has his straight back and his legs directly up because he can't bend his knees.
There's a snake in my boot.
That's exactly how Mraz is sitting on the couch. His back is straight up. His legs are straight out. He just looks like Woody from Toy Story if Woody had just drank like 7 pints of alcohol. 7 pints of paint thinner. E-I-E-I-O. With a honk honk there, a honk honk there. God bless Danielle for being our informant on this. It's just so damn good. Oh my God. Craig tweets, the visualization of Mraz stuffing his pockets with cookies has officially made my morning. Mikey tweets, maybe one day Pete the Body can add, oh, with bacon. After Mraz says, we're going to have a little pie. Yeah, I think that might
with
be
bacon.
Tomorrow's show, we'll add that. Oh, with bacon. Want to have a little pie? Oh, with bacon. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer and cat burglar extraordinaire. Thanks to Pete the Body Melodio, the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. We'll see you tomorrow. Be good and be good to one another. The Mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.